Hi. Yeah, it's funny how excited I am to take the love the 7 steps work, and I'm really excited to continue where we left off last night by looking at quote number 70. What I am going to do, of course, is give you all a link to my journal. Hi, Sharon. I'm going to give you all a link to my journal, to the journaling of quote 70, because that's where we're going to be starting today. But before we start, I'd like to take a moment of silence. So why don't we do that? Amen. Oh yeah, that was in silence, Dove. Yeah, but of course last night, as you know, there was no sound because, well, I thought I had the mic, but I didn't, so you never know. It's always worth typing in no sound. Just in case. Yeah, it's always worth it. You never know. All right. So I've given you all the link. I forgot to notice who's in the room and who wasn't, so let me just give it one more time. This is the link to the journaling of number 70. Oops, Monica just came in the room, so we will post it one more time for her. There you go, Monica. And what I'm going to do, of course, is start reading from the 7 Steps to Awakening first. Quote number 70, we're in the Nisargadatta Maharaj section of step one, and we're on page 28 in the book, if you have the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening. All right, so here is what Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj said. Words are of the mind, and the mind obscures and distorts. Hence, the absolute need to go beyond words and move over to my side. If you know Nisargadatta, you know he always spoke from the absolute. When he said, I, my, he was referring to the absolute. He never, at least not that I've read of him, he never spoke as a person. He maybe did a little bit of that, but usually when he was speaking, he spoke as the absolute. So again, he says, words are of the mind, and the mind obscures and distorts. Hence, the absolute need to go beyond words and move over to my side. All right, so let's go directly to the journal. That's the link I gave you. Number 70, this is what I wrote after contemplating this particular quote. Understanding cannot come from the study or discussion of words, because mind gives meaning to words, and mind doesn't understand. Understanding must come from direct experience. Allow direct experience by not clogging attention with words. Last night I spoke a little bit about how, for the most part, there are occasional exceptions, but for the most part I am done with the, at least now done, who knows what the future holds, but I am done with the job of counselor. And I'm sure there are a lot of reasons for that. The guidance just came. But what's happened since the guidance came and since I chose to follow it is that I've some of the reasons maybe that were behind the guidance have become obvious to me. Things I wasn't aware of before. And one of those things that has become obvious is that people really do not understand words because they're not understandable. You know, I may say something to someone thinking that I am very clear, and yet they hear the exact same words that I spoke and they hear something different. They think something different as a result of those words. And then later, you know, oftentimes it came back to me that, you know, they would say, well, you said, you know, dot, dot, dot. And they would put it in their own words, which was really helpful. And I would think, that's not what I said. That may be what you heard, but that is in no way what I intended to communicate. I remember back in communication classes, back when I was a director of training in the corporate world, and Lynn may be aware of this too because I think she did some training too. You know, we often taught people that when you were in business communications, we taught people to repeat back what you think you heard. Okay, so here's what I think I hear you say, and then repeat it back in your own words. And that made for more effective business communications, especially during tough negotiations, because words are so they're so easy to misunderstand. Yeah, that Lynn's calling it reflective listening. See, I told you she'd know this. So what I'm realizing is that that was one of the weaknesses of counseling, is that unless a person within themselves was ready to hear what was being said, they would not hear it. Their mind would distort it or change it, and they would hear something different, and then you as the counselor possibly were to blame. I think that one thing that is becoming obvious to all of us, more and more obvious, it's not that it wasn't obvious before, but it seems to be rising in obviousness, is that the absolute best way to learn, to realize solutions, to receive guidance, to get clarity of seeing, is from within ourself. Because within ourself, even if it seems to come in words, like through a journaling process, there's an understanding that comes with those words. So that that miscommunication does not occur. So what I feel this year is to spend a lot of time with myself, and I know a lot of other people are feeling that same desire, that same guidance, to spend a lot of time with their self, learning from their self where miscommunication cannot occur, because although words may be used, the communication is truly beyond the words. So number 70, understanding cannot come from the study or discussion of words, because mind gives meaning to words and mind doesn't understand. Understanding must come from direct experience. Allow direct experience by not clogging attention with words. So why don't you scroll on down. Just above the gray area, I think you guys probably know the routine. Click on number 71, and I'm going to let Jamie in. She's going over to say hi to Ruby. Ruby's here today. All right, so first I'll read number 71 in the book. Here we go. Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. You give reality to concepts, while concepts are distortions of reality. Abandon all conceptualization and stay silent and attentive. Be earnest about it, and all will be well with you. So again, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Did my tongue say that right that time? I don't know. Here we go. You give reality to concepts, while concepts are distortions of reality. Abandon all conceptualization and stay silent and attentive. Be earnest about it, and all will be well with you. So this is what that said to me through contemplation, number 71. Notice concepts as they appear in the mind and abandon them before giving the weight of reality to them. This goes for all concepts. Be earnest about remaining still and silent, conceptless. All else will be taken care of. So this definitely refers to what I was speaking about a lot last night. Last night I spoke a lot about at least where I am right now. I do not have the power or the ability to keep my mind silent so that there is no word thoughts, no ideas. The word thoughts and the ideas appear. But what I do have the power to do is to notice them and to decide not to follow them, not to feed them, not to give my belief to them, right? To notice they are just concepts, to notice they are blocks to the awareness of love's presence. And this is maybe my primary practice now. It's hard to say what a primary practice is when there are a few that are being used. But I do notice myself doing this. I notice thoughts coming in about, you know, maybe who somebody is or what to expect from a future event or whatever. And I notice me noticing them. And noticing them is different than believing them. So there's a noticing and a realizing that's just a concept. A realizing I don't know. This is something that goes on a lot of the time. And of course, as I mentioned last night, and Dove is using the word earnestness, I mentioned last night that I, you know, some people may say that I am quite vigilant, but I know that there's the opportunity to become more vigilant, more earnest. And so that is my desire, my goal, my purpose, to just get as good as I can with this power that I have of noticing concepts but not believing them. The power of decision, I mentioned, the Course calls it. So notice concepts as they appear in the mind and abandon them before giving the weight of reality to them. This goes for all concepts. Be earnest about remaining still and silent, which is conceptless. All else will be taken care of. You know, this all else will be taken care of shows up a few times in the journaling, and it always reminds me of in the Course when we were told for us to do our part and let Holy Spirit do its part, right? For us to do our part, and we could say let the miracle do its part. All right, let's scroll down then. And we're going to go to click on number 72. And I will read number 70. Oh, here's another one of those really long ones. No, just joking. I was totally tongue-in-cheek. It's super short, 6 words. All right, here we go. Number 72. Try to go beyond the words. Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj tells us, which I think we get now, But boy, there was a time when we needed his presence to show up at our course groups and tell us this, didn't we? And maybe in some places they still need that. But I do feel a shift occurring in what I would call the course community as a whole. And I think you all are aware of that shift as well, where we are shifting and changing. You could call it awakening together. But there was definitely a time when to have him spontaneously appear in our course groups and say, try to go beyond the words. We probably would have just thrown him out, to be honest. So maybe it wouldn't have been so helpful. But let's look at the journaling. So the journaling of number 72. One cannot go beyond words while giving credence value to the word thoughts in mind. One must disregard word thoughts of mind to go beyond words. This is releasing attachment to thoughts. As I mentioned last night, this journal is you know, for me. This is a personal journal, and I love sharing it because teaching is helpful to me. So, talk about selfish. I'm a very selfish girl. But sometimes I really feel, you know, sometimes I can see things are, you know, truly helpful to probably everyone. And sometimes I can see, you know, maybe they are, but I can see that this is really speaking to me. And you know, what I was realizing is that if I am in a course group, for example, if I'm in any group, any spiritual discussion type of situation, that unless I've let go of giving value to my own thoughts, I'm going to end up getting into that discussion as a person. You know, somebody may say something in the course, well, this means dot, 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 dot. And my thoughts may say, oh, actually, you know, they're a little wrong here. You know, this they don't realize this means this. And, you know, I sit and I listen to the discussion a little bit and I see everyone kind of, you know, in my opinion, going off track. I'm listening to my own thoughts telling me how everyone's going on track. I'm listening to my own thoughts telling me how, you know, really people need to be corrected here. And the next thing I know, I'm in the discussion explaining what those words in the book mean. I'm making, you know, if they are making a mistake, I'm now making the same mistake in effect. So the only way that I can go beyond words all of the time and be in that state of mind that is beyond words, to be that being that is beyond words, is to not give credence value to the word thoughts in my mind. It's imperative to be unconcerned about whatever the mind is saying. As soon as I give it attention, my body, my actions in the world are going to follow. So number 72, one cannot go beyond words while giving credence value to the word thoughts in mind. One must disregard word thoughts of mind to go beyond words. This is releasing attachment to thoughts. All right, let's scroll down and go to number 73. Is everybody following okay in the journal? Have you guys got the hang of how this blog works? If not, let me know and I'll post a link for you. But I'm going on the assumption at this point that you guys know how this works. So if anybody needs the link, let me know and I will paste it. All right, I'm returning to The Seven Steps to Awakening, quote number 73. This one is a little more lengthy. Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Unready means afraid. You are afraid of what you are. Your destination is the whole, but you are afraid that you will lose your identity. This is childishness, clinging to the toys, to your desires and fears, opinions and ideas. Give it all up and be ready for the real to assert itself. All right, let's go on to the journaling. Number 73. Become ready for self to make itself known by letting go of personal ideas of self, personality, opinions, ideas, desires, and fears. To cling to personal ideas of self is to fear emergence of self and hold it at bay through attachment to ideas of personal identity. I told you that one of the things that my mind does now, my corrective mind, you know, we have a corrective mind, which we call the Holy Spirit. We have a corrective mind, and then we have the error mind, which the Course calls the wrong mind, or we could call it ego. And then there's I that's noticing this, you know. But one thing I notice my corrective mind doing is pointing out when I'm believing an idea about myself, just pointing it out. It like silently highlights it. So, you know, I can't think of one right now, so I'm going to have to make something up. But let's say, I can't use this W word, so you'll have to try and understand what I'm saying, because there's a dog near me. You know how sometimes you can't use the W word with a dog around? But let's say I'm outside moving my legs in the sunshine. Do you understand? I can't even spell it. She knows how to spell this word. Let's say I'm outside, you know, moving around in the sunshine. And I'm having a conversation with someone, and I say, boy, I hope we don't see any snakes. I'm really afraid of snakes. What my mind would do if I made a comment like that, as soon as I said it, would highlight it for me. It would show me that I am believing something about myself. Maybe, you know, ever since I can remember, I've had this belief that I'm afraid of snakes. Maybe when I see a snake, I run and scream. But by holding on to that belief, by saying to my friend, you know, I hope we don't see any snakes, I'm really afraid of snakes, I'm clinging to the idea of this self. This is a self. Part of this self makeup is fear of snakes. You know, part of this self makeup is I don't like loud people. You know, part of this self makeup is I can't stand a messy house. Part of this self makeup is I hate people who tailgate. Part of this self makeup is I love to keep my hair colored and never have my roots show. By the way, I'm making all of this up. Except for maybe the house thing. But my house isn't perfectly clean. Ruby's sitting here in my septic erupted basement. And we're fine, right, Ruby? Yeah. It's definitely, you know, it's kind of misshapen right now. But, you know, these are thoughts that have been with us for a very long time, these thoughts about who I am. And, you know, we continue to believe them. We continue to tell our friends, oh, I can't go there. I'm afraid of that. Or, oh, I can't go there. I don't like that. You know, I know there's only one table available in the restaurant over there in the smoking section, but I can't stand cigarette smoke. That'll just bother me. I won't be able to sit there. You know, just all this normal stuff. That's not true. It's not who we are. It's not true. They're ideas, concepts, believed, and therefore experienced and acted out. And they keep the realization of who we are at bay, which means away from us. So this journaling is saying, become ready, right? Remember, Sri Nazar Gadatta said, unready means afraid, right? Well, let's let go of that fear. We have that power to choose again. So let's become ready. Let's tell our corrective mind, say to Holy Spirit, I am willing to notice when I make a statement about myself that is not true as if that is true, as if that is who I am. I like baths better than showers. You know, who likes baths better than showers? Right? Start just highlighting these things for me so that I can see them and I can begin to question them and change my mind about them. Become ready. Become ready for self to make its self known by letting go of personal ideas of self. Personal ideas of personality. Personal opinions. Just personal ideas themselves. Personal desires and personal fears. To cling to personal ideas of self is to fear emergence of self. Imagine that when we say, oh no, I can't sit over there in the smoking section, I hate smoke. We're fearing the emergence of self. I don't think we usually make that connection. But that's what this is saying. To cling to personal ideas of self is to fear emergence of self and hold it at bay through attachment to ideas of personal identity. So we want to start allowing our corrective mind to highlight those for us so we can start loosening our attachment to those ideas. Again, some of this stuff may appear to take time, and that's okay. Right now we have time, don't we? So we might as well use it for this purpose. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 74. I'm having fun. Can you tell, Ruby?
Yeah,
I love this. Yeah. Ruby's having fun, too. Okay. Number 74. Oh, here we go. Do not worry about others. Deal with your own mind first. Oh, by the way, Lynn is sending you love notes, Ruby. She says, I love you, Ruby. Do not worry about others. Deal with your own mind first. Okay, number 74 in the journal, short and sweet. It is not my role to help others. It is my role to be silent. Now, what I mean by silent here is, well, the best way to refer to silent is to refer back to number 73. What I mean by silent here is not to have opinions, for example, about how things should be. You know, if I agree with someone that something's wrong, well, then I'm going to want to jump in there and help them to fix it. But if I do not have any opinions, that's silent. If I do not have any opinions, then I can't see anything wrong. There's an unfolding going on that is perfect. And I'm not going to want to jump in there and help them fix it. I'm just going to want to allow it to be. There's another journaling that's coming up sometime. I don't remember exactly. I don't have these things memorized by number. Wouldn't that be cool if I could say, oh, number 156 says? That would be a lot of fun, but I can't do that. But there is another journaling that we will be getting to eventually that points out that if you know something is an illusion, for example, you're driving down the highway and you see a mirage in the highway ahead of you, how do you respond if you know it's an illusion? Do you slam on the brakes? Do you say, oh my God, we can't go that way, we're going to get caught in the flood? You know? No, of course not. You just keep right on driving because you know that there's nothing there. How do you respond when you know it's an illusion? You're willing to let it be. My role, again, my role is the one who is accepting the atonement for herself. My role is to learn to be silent. And my role is to let my corrective mind point out to me, oops, you just agreed with her that that's wrong and needs to be fixed. So that I can change my mind to take that back. I have that power. I have that power. And if I want awakening to truth, I will utilize that power. I will allow my corrective mind to point out my habitual mistakes so that I can change my mind, take it back. It is not my role to help others. It is my role to be silent. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 75. And I do notice some gentle listener. I think that's Diana, right? Diana has entered the room, so I'll give her the link. There you go, my love. Before reading from that link, however, we will read from the book. This is a long one. At least the journaling is. We'll see what it looks like in the book. The Seven Steps to Awakening, number 75. Nope, it's short. Sri Nazar Gadatta was short. I was long. So, let's see. Here's what he said. Learn to look without imagination, to listen without distortion. Again, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Learn to look without imagination, to listen without distortion. All right, now the journaling of number 75. When our eyes look, our minds make up stories about what we see. Notice this imagination action and choose to drop it as soon as you see it. If you start to tell a story that has come from imagination regarding what you see, drop the story in mid-telling when noticed. If the story was told, drop it in the heart when it is noticed that the story came from imagination. Okay, I'll stop here for a moment. We'll read the second paragraph in a second. But one thing that has become apparent to me, I mentioned this last night, it's become really apparent in the last year, is that we make up stories all the time, not purposefully lying to people, but we just see something, we have like a little bit of a glimpse of something, and our mind immediately applies it to all of our past experience that is at all similar. And we fill in the I don't know gaps with what we think we know, and then we tell somebody. And we believe our own story. That's why I say it's not lying, we're not like being deceitful, consciously deceitful. But we're making stuff up, we're believing what we make up, and we're telling the story. An example I gave last night is somebody might say to me, what's wrong with Jasmine? And I might say, oh, Jasmine, da-da-da, go right on based on my experience. Here's what's wrong with Jasmine. I'm making it up as I go. Somebody may point at Lynn across the room sitting in a chair and say, hey, what's Lynn thinking over there? Oh, well, here's what Lynn's thinking. I'm making it up as I go. And we do this unless our corrective mind has already started to point it out to you, then you might know how often you do it. But if your corrective mind has not started pointing it out to you, you will discover at some point that we do this much, much, much more than we know. The Course talks about this in the workbook when it talks about all I see is the past. We see something, all of our past, quote, knowledge, which was actually just interpretation in the first place, but all of that comes in, gets added to what we see, and we think we know what we're looking at. So what this is recommending then is that we notice this. Or we could say give permission to our corrective mind, give permission to the Holy Spirit to point it out to us. Say, go ahead, show me when I'm making something up and I don't know it. Let me see that. So notice this imagination action and choose to drop it as soon as you see it. So, we're driving down the road and we see something in a field that's a little unusual. and somebody says, "What's that?" And you notice your mind immediately making up what that is based on your past experience of something similar. And then you just say, "You know what? I don't know." You drop it. You notice that your mind is at work making up a story. And you just say, "I don't know." Now, sometimes we won't notice the corrective mind pointing it out right away that quickly. So sometimes we'll start to tell the story. "Oh, well, that's a da-da-da, you know, back in the 1880s, blah, 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 and somebody must have left that." And then you realize, I'm making this up. Right in this story, you say, "You know what? I don't know." I did that with Jasmine this morning. We were driving to school, and there was a car on the side of the road where there usually isn't a car on the side of the road. A guy sitting there, a couple of people actually, two or three people sitting there in this car, just sitting there on the side of the road, this truck. And Jasmine said to me, "What's he doing sitting there?" And I said, "Well, oh, what did I say?" I remember I said something like, "Well, it's cold this morning. Maybe he doesn't want his son to have to wait for the school bus in the cold, so they're waiting in the car." And then I realized I just made up a story. Based on the fact that it was near a bus stop, and based on the fact that I thought I'd seen that truck there before, and I'd seen a little boy there before, but I was putting all those pieces from the past together and making up a story. But then I caught myself. The corrective mind pointed it out. And so then I said, "Or maybe I don't know what they're doing there." And Jasmine said, "That's probably more likely." So we do it all the time. It's innocent. I mean, it's totally innocent. But, you know, if we look back at what Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj said, he said, "Learn to look without imagination." Right? That's what we want to do. We want to learn to look without imagination. But first, we have to notice how much imagination there is in our looking. And we have to be willing to just kind of stop that. You know, like Bob Newhart says, stop it. So right in the middle of a story, or maybe you just say it. You tell somebody, blah, 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 blah. And then you say, "You know, I just made that up." I do that all the time. I'll go ahead and tell the story before I catch myself. But just as I'm finishing the story, I notice that I made that up. And so I'll say, "I just made that up." It's okay. So when our eyes look, our minds make up stories about what we see. This is what we do, people. Notice this imagination action and choose to drop it as soon as you see it. If you start to tell a story that has come from imagination regarding what you see, drop the story in mid-telling when noticed. If the story was told, like you realize tomorrow or a week later, "Oh my God, I just realized I made up a story and I told so-and-so that," right? If the story was told, then just drop it in the heart. You don't necessarily have to do anything else, especially if it's one of these silly little innocent stories, like I think they're waiting for the school bus. You don't even have to go back and say, "Remember last week when I said that? I was wrong." Because they're not even going to remember last week when you said that, so it's not important. But you just, again, want to drop it in your heart and say, "Ah, I see I was wrong." That's what's important, right? So if the story was told, drop it in the heart when it is noticed that the story came from imagination. Now, all of that was based on the first half of Nisargadatta's statement. He said, learn to look without imagination. And then he said, learn to listen without distortion. So that's the second paragraph. Jamie wants to go outside. Are you going to let her out, Ruby? Thank you so much. When our ears listen, our imagination makes up an interpretation of what we hear, or it adds to what we hear, or it assumes intentions for what we hear. Learn to notice this mind activity and drop it as soon as it is noticed. If it is noticed after it has been completed, drop what was imagined or assumed as soon as it is noticed. So this is really the same, except now we're talking about hearing. You know, somebody says something to me, you know, something really brief. I don't know. I can't think of an example. Let's see. Somebody says something to me about, "You know, I'd really like to have lunch with you next week. Can we do that?" That's all they say. I'd really like to have lunch with you next week. Can we do that? And then my mind thinks, I bet she wants to talk to me about dot, dot, dot. You know? I bet she heard that I dot, 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 and she wants to say something. I better prepare my defense. You know? All she said was she wanted to eat lunch. You know, our minds do that. Our minds make up stuff as we're hearing. Here's why she's saying that, you know. Somebody says, I really like so-and-so. And we make up a story about why they say that, you know, just in our hearing. We can't leave anything alone. But what Srinivasa Gadada Maharaj is asking us to do is to learn to leave it alone. And again, we do that with the help of the corrective mind, the Holy Spirit. We ask the corrective mind to show us when we're doing it, because it's such a habit. We do it all the time, you know, dozens of times a day, I'm sure, without being aware. So what we need to ask for is the awareness to be provided. That needs to be a gift. We need the awareness to be provided. We need something to point out to us, up, you're doing it again. And then we have the power to change our mind and say, never mind. Or I don't really know why she asked me to lunch. I don't know why I thought that, right? All I know is she asked me to lunch. Okay, so let's scroll on down and click on number 76. We have had a couple of people enter the room. So I will give you the link to number 76 in the room. Okay, Ruby says she likes 76. Let's see what she likes here. Okay, so starting with the book, at the bottom of page 28, your questions are about a non-existing person. You know, I imagine, I'm making up a story, that some people were offended by some of the stuff that Srinivasa Gadada Maharaj said to them, but I'm making up a story. You see how I just did it? Your questions are about a non-existing person. All right, let's look at what Regina Don Akers wrote in her journal. Number 76. Whatever I am concerned about or worried about regarding my comfort, my health, my peace of mind, etc., are thoughts about a non-existent person. This me and mine are not who I am. To be concerned about this me or mine is to cling to a false illusion as if it is self. Forget about this me or mine. Forget its desires, its preferences, its fears. Let all things be without this layer of identification. Let me and mine fade into non-perceived by not responding as if its thought appearance has value. And then I wrote a note at the bottom that says, self-inquiry can be used to notice and release attachment to the thought appearance of me and mine. So I'm sure we've all, at some point in our life, had that thought, what about me? You know, when, you know, it doesn't matter. Maybe we think we need quiet. I mean, I'm in a year now of silence. You know, the ego wants to grab onto that too. The ego wants to grab onto that too. And the ego, you know, wants to say that, you know, maybe Jasmine and Danielle shouldn't talk to me. Maybe Ruby shouldn't be here right now. How offensive. You know? Because I declared I'm in a year of silence, and why the hell aren't people listening? Right? Who is that I? Who is that I that's worried about my silence that the world won't make room for, won't give me, won't understand, they don't understand me? You know, when I'm worried about that I's silence, I'm forgetting who I am. Because the true I is silent. Even if Ruby's here, even if Jasmine and Danielle are talking to me, right? The true I is silent. And To be honest, my heart says, I can trust the universe. The universe has guided me into this year of silence. So I can trust the universe to make the space for the amount of alone time that I need. And when somebody like Ruby calls me up and says, you know, I'd really like to see you, I can say yes to that because I can know that the universe is not going to crowd me out of what it's asked me to embrace. Right? It's just not gonna. The universe doesn't work that way. It's not gonna crowd me out of what it's asked me to embrace. So I have enough alone time. And in fact, I can tell you I have more alone time than I did before. Certainly a lot of things have been cut out, and you all know this. There's reduced travel. There is no counseling. There is, there's not the study with the scribes. There's one less teaching in Pal Talk. Things have been moved around to give me more alone time, so that is happening. But then the ego might want to grab a hold of that and say, but I need even more, and you are in my way. And you can feel that that's ego, because it's not loving. There's no love in it. And when I'm all worried about my alone time that I was guided to have, I'm totally falling for the false self. I'm concerned about the false self. And that's exactly the self I need to surrender, to let go of, in order to realize the silence I'm guided towards. Right? What about me? What about what I need? Tricky, tricky thoughts. And we've all felt them. Whatever I am concerned about or worried about regarding my comfort, my health, whose health? The body's health, right? Am I the body? Why am I all concerned about the body's health? I think Sharon was kind of getting to this when I heard her speaking. Sounded to me like she was getting ready to let go of the idea that her health or lack of health had any true meaning at all. And that I applaud that. It has no true meaning. Whatever I am concerned about or worried about regarding my comfort, my health, my peace of mind, right? Whenever that my is emphasized, these are thoughts about a non-existent person. This me and mine are not who I am. To be concerned about this me or mine is to cling to a false illusion as if it is self. Forget about this me or mine. Forget about it. Forget its desires, its preferences, and even its fears. This is reminding me of what we already looked at about if we're clinging to our ideas of... Hold on one second. If we're clinging to our ideas of what we want, what we fear, who we are, then what we're really doing is fearing ourselves, trying to hold ourselves at bay, right? This reminds me of that. Forget the me or mine's desires, preferences, fears. Now, I love this sentence. Let all things be without this layer of identification, right? It kind of is back to the idea I shared a moment ago that I trust the universe. The universe has guided me to have more alone time and a year of silence. I said yes. Now I trust the universe to give me the balance that it wants me to have. I don't need to make that happen, right? So I can let all things be without some personal identification with the way they are. And whether I like it that way or don't like it that way, right? I can trust the universe. I can let all things be without this layer of identification. I can let me and mine fade into non-perceived which means not experienced anymore, dead. By not responding as if its thought appearance has value. Again, these ideas may show up. I just don't listen to them. The idea may show up, oh, but I need that time to be alone. But if I needed that time to be alone, the universe would not be sending me Ruby or Danielle or Jasmine, right? Or even Jamie likes attention, right? I can let things be without this layer of identification. Let me and mine fade into non-perceived by not responding as if its thought appearance has value. And again, self-inquiry can be used to notice and release attachment to thought appearance of me and mind, right? So if there was an idea, I wanted to be alone, who wanted to be alone? Ask that question very quickly, and at least in my experience, great clarity comes that I was just about to listen to ego, and I can use my power of decision to change my mind right away. All right, let's do at least one more. I got to remember my clock is different than yours for some reason. I don't know where my computer clock got off, but I've noticed you guys are about 3 minutes different from me. So let's go to number 77. It's 11:51. See, I have 11:55. Or, well, yeah. If I was in California, I'd have 11:55. I have 12:55. But the point is that the last two digits are different. Yeah. All right, so let's look at number 77. At the top of page 29 in the 7 Steps to Awakening. And I don't remember if anybody else came in the room or not, so let me just go ahead and give this link. I forgot to pay attention that time. I try to pay attention, but, you know. All right, so first I'm looking in the book, however, before we look at that link. The silence of the mind will dissolve and absorb all else. So Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj says, the silence of the mind will dissolve and absorb all else. All right, let's look at Regina Dawn Akers. And this is what came to me after contemplating what we've just read. God is absolute stillness, that which allows and contains everything. To return to God awareness, return to stillness. Trust stillness. Given some effort in the direction of stillness, stillness itself will rise up and complete the effort. This is where willingness meets grace. This is like the story of the prodigal son, when the prodigal son decides to give up this life he has chosen for himself and return home to his father, and his father runs out to greet him. Right? This is like in A Course in Miracles when it says God takes the last step. Given some effort in the direction of stillness, stillness itself will rise up and complete the effort. So the effort we give in the direction of stillness is our willingness, and our willingness is manifest through our willingness to practice what our inner guidance asks us to practice, and to practice it to the best of our ability, and to not judge ourselves as not good enough. Right? That's our effort. We practice what our inner guidance asks us to practice. We practice it to the best of our current ability. And we do not judge ourselves as not good enough. If we do that little bit, stillness itself will rise up and complete that little effort. God will take the last step. Grace will meet willingness. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 78. In the book, Nisargadatta Maharaj said, "Do not ask superficial questions. Apply yourself to fundamentals, to the very roots of your being." Again, Nisargadatta said, "Do not ask superficial questions. Apply yourself to fundamentals, to the very roots of your being." All right, so here is what I wrote in the journal, number 78. Notice distraction thought when attention has gone there, and return attention to purpose, heart, center. It sounds like this is, you know, Nisargadatta is talking about the fundamentals, right? He says, apply yourself to fundamentals, to the very roots of your being, right? And it sounds like this is what my inner self showed the fundamental to be. The fundamental spiritual practice is noticing when my attention has gone to word stories, distraction thoughts, daydreams in the mind. Notice that and then return to the purpose heart center, the fundamental practice. Notice distraction thought when attention has gone there and return to purpose heart center. Stay in purpose heart center with all activity and all non-activity. Do not be excited by anything else. Remain solid in purpose heart center. When I am in my right mind, I am thrilled by the practice of staying in the heart no matter what I'm doing. Whether I'm doing dishes, talking to Ruby, watching TV with Jasmine, hiking, right? What thrills me the most is that I remembered to stay in purpose heart center while doing it. That's what this "do not be excited by anything else" really means. It means stay in that right mind. In that right mind that would rather do this than anything else, which also means doing this while doing anything else, right? Don't let any football game, any novel, any movie, any conversation be more exciting to you than staying in your heart. So exciting that you forget to stay in your heart, right? Because that's what happens when something else is more exciting. You forget. And before you know it, you're in your wrong mind. So notice distraction thought when attention has gone there. Notice distraction thought when attention has gone there. And return attention to purpose heart center. Stay in purpose heart center with all activity and all non-activity. Do not be excited by anything else. Remain solid. Solid. What a great word, huh? Remain solid in purpose heart center. And that is the fundamental spiritual practice. And with that, I am done. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming with me on this journey. Bye.